This is Impeachment, a daily podcast from WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. It's Monday, January 6th. The big political story today was supposed to be the tug of war between Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell over sending the articles of impeachment to the Senate and how and when the trial of Donald Trump would begin. Instead, the dominant story is the assassination of Iranian military leader Qasem Soleimani. But Elizabeth Warren, for one, sees a connection.
Why didn't this happen a month ago? Why didn't it happen a month from now? Why right now, as Donald Trump faces a potential impeachment trial in the United States Senate next week?
Elizabeth Warren on Meet the Press yesterday. We will talk about both things right now, including where they overlap. With me now is USA Today Washington Bureau Chief Susan Page, who is also finishing a biography of Nancy Pelosi. Susan, thanks so much for some time today on a don't know which way to look first kind of day. Hi and Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you, Brian.
How much company does Senator Warren have so far in asking the question? And she may not be making the assertion, but she's at least asking a question about Trump trying to water down or distract from the impeachment process.
Well, almost no one is making this charge directly, that it's a kind of wag the dog scenario where the president's trying to divert attention from impeachment. There is a lot of questioning going on and analysis and curiosity about the timing of the president's decision to go ahead with this very provocative act and what it might be related to. That's one of the big questions that Congress, especially Democrats in Congress, want to pursue.
How is the Iran development actually affecting the impeachment process, if at all?
Well, so far, it's not affecting the impeachment process because at the moment, there is no impeachment process. Nothing is happening on impeachment as we speak because we're all waiting for Speaker Pelosi to send the articles of impeachment over to the Senate. It's been a little bit of a surprise, I think, that she's held them back. It hasn't really mattered up to now because Congress wasn't around anyway to move forward on an impeachment trial. That changes this week. There is some expectation that she will send the articles of impeachment over this week, but we don't know that for sure. And at that point, we may see some debate about whether the Senate should hold off on moving ahead with an impeachment trial because of the national security crisis. I don't know if that is likely to happen or not, but it may be part of the debate.
Some Democrats argue that Trump needs congressional approval for what many are calling an act of war against Iran by assassinating one of its actual government leaders, not just an outside terrorist like bin Laden or the head of ISIS. Is anyone calling that alleged violation of the War Powers Act another impeachable abuse of power?
Well, some Democrats have suggested that it should be part of the debate over impeachment, or that it would be appropriate to impeach President Trump again on charges relating to this. But you know, Speaker Pelosi has been pretty firm in trying to keep the impeachment process focused on the Ukraine issue and not become broader over other grievances that Democrats and other critics have of the president. So I would be surprised if this became part of the impeachment debate. But you know what? I'm out of the business of making firm predictions about anything because they are so often wrong.
Here's an example of Trump's support for the attack, holding among Republicans who will be his impeachment jurors. It's Senator Marco Rubio of Florida on CBS Face the Nation being interviewed by Margaret Brennan.
Has it been explained to Congress?
Yes, at least I understand it, and it's called self-defense. The United States has over 5,000 military personnel in Iraq, and of course, additional personnel in Syria who are under direct threat, not just from Iran, but from their proxy groups. And Iran needs to understand that if we are attacked, whether it's directly by the Iranians or through these proxy groups, we will respond. This president has shown, he's not getting a lot of credit for it, but tremendous restraint after 11 rocket attacks, after everything that happened in the shipping lanes, after the mines that they placed on those ships, after the attacks against Saudi Arabia. He has shown tremendous restraint in not responding to those. But now we have reached a new level, and it was time to enforce the crossing of these red lines.
And Rubio dismissed the claims about the War Powers Act as part of this answer.
Everything the president is warning about is all defensive. He is not saying Congress, I need 100,000 American troops to invade Iran. That's why all this talk about war powers and congressional authority is so silly. The president's not talking about invading Iran. He's talking about responding to anything Iran may do in the future. And a president has not only the full authority to do that, but an obligation to do that.
So, Susan, how much does Marco Rubio there speak for the Republican caucus at large?
Well, we haven't heard a lot of complaints from Republicans about the lack of notice and consultation with Congress, but we are hearing a lot from Democrats. And Senator Rubio is incorrect in saying that Congress has been briefed about this, certainly not briefed ahead of time. A classified letter was sent to Congress in the aftermath about the president's decision to go ahead here. Some Republicans have been briefed. Lindsey Graham was down playing golf with the president last week in Florida, and he said after the attack took place that he had talked to the president about it. But certainly the consultation that previous administrations have undertaken with Congress at moments of great military confrontation, that has not taken place this time around. And while the White House may argue that these are defensive or preemptively defensive actions, they've raised the prospect of getting us involved in a increased military action in a volatile region.
What about Trump threatening what almost everyone agrees would be a war crime under international law, attacking sites of cultural significance to Iranians, not just military significance, and inside Iran itself, depending on how Iran retaliates for the assassination? Trump has threatened that twice now in the last few days. Are all the Republicans with him on that, being in the U.S. national security interest?
You know, this was extraordinary. The president sent a tweet out initially that suggested sites of cultural importance would be on the list of 52 targets that the United States has drawn up in Iran. But then the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, did the full tour of Sunday shows and said repeatedly that the United States would abide, would not commit a war crime, which attacking a cultural site would be. But coming back from Florida last night, the president doubled down in comments with reporters that he thinks cultural sites are appropriate and appropriate to attack if he decides that's necessary. We haven't heard a lot of Republicans speak out on this to defend it. Or to criticize it, but it certainly is something that is pretty extraordinary. And, you know, it's done two things. It has helped unite Iranians against the United States. You know, there had been a protest movement in Iran going on that had heartened some American analysts. That's over. Iran is now united against the United States. It has splintered us from our allies. And among the voices we are not hearing today are our traditional allies speaking up to say they stand with the United States in the confrontation with Iran.
I don't think Trump would actually go ahead and attack cultural sites, but I do wonder if politically he's looking to rally anti-Muslim sentiment in the Republican base by threatening that. You don't have to agree with me on that, but in the context of impeachment, are any Democrats talking about even threatening a war crime like that being another potentially impeachable offense? But it's also the reason that I don't think he would do it. If he were to start bombing mosques or museums or their equivalent of the Washington Monument or whatever cultural site you want to name, it would be a high crime by almost any standard. So is no one in Washington saying that?
It would be a violation of international law. It would set up the United States in a place that we haven't been before, with in the company of regimes that we scorn. So I guess I agree with you that I don't think it's likely to happen, but I'm not sure. I don't say that with confidence, because the president has now said it and then doubled down in the face of criticism of it. And in terms of it becoming an impeachable offense, that's like three steps down the road. I think it's hard to, I think we're sort of living a day at a time here to see what happens. What are the continuing consequences of the decision the president made? We think the administration will be on the Hill this week to brief members of Congress about the justification, the intelligence that the president and the Secretary of State have cited in justifying this attack. It's not that I think that couldn't possibly happen. I just think it's a little premature, and there's some big questions that need to be answered first.
but maybe we now have Trump getting us embroiled in another conflict in the Middle East at whatever level that might backfire on us and that might turn out to be highly unpopular domestically. I mean, many people seem to be assuming that the assassination of Soleimani is politically good for Trump. I'm not so sure. The electorate in both parties are sick of the U.S. fighting endless wars in the Middle East, and that was part of Trump's campaign, to be the opposite of George W. Bush in that respect. So I'm just curious if you see solid Republican support for this action on the Republican side of the Senate or in the Republican rank and file.
You know, you see the kind of muted criticism from people like Will Hurd. I saw him on making some comments in television interviews. The congressman who is retiring from Texas, a former CIA analyst. You don't hear big outcries from Republicans on this or on other issues involving the president. If you want to say, is this politically popular? It's not the politics of this is not the most important issue to consider. But if you were going to look at it, certainly no defenders of General Soleimani among Americans. He was a brutal terrorist. And the idea that it might lead us to withdraw all our troops from Iraq, that might be pretty popular with Americans. But if it engages us in a bloody new military confrontation in the Middle East, a new endless war, that would not be politically possible, but politically popular. If it leaves us without allies around the world, if it results in the collapse of the Iranian nuclear agreement, as it seems to be doing, despite all its flaws, that agreement was putting some curbs on Iranian action. If we have a confrontation coming shortly with North Korea, and some North Korea analysts say that the fact that we are in such a chaotic situation now with Iraq and Iran would encourage the North Korean regime to try to pull something to take advantage of the chaos. So I think all those developments would be very politically unhelpful to the president.
I also have an impeachment-related theory that the Trump politics behind the attack could also be in part to keep John Bolton on his side. Maybe this is too conspiratorial, but if Bolton would be the ultimate damaging witness in a Senate trial, as is often speculated, well, Bolton is also the ultimate hawk on Iran, and he might think this is the best foreign policy thing Trump has done, and it's huge, and be less likely to sink Trump's ship right at this moment. I admit I'm speculating here wildly, but is anyone in Washington saying anything like this?
I have not heard that. It is a, you know, it's not in a world in which incredible things have happened. You don't want to rule anything out, but that is not something I've heard, certainly not something I've heard any reporting on.
What's Pelosi's thinking now about when to hand the articles of impeachment to the Senate?
So Speaker Pelosi has been pretty disciplined in not letting us know what her thinking is. I do think that what we know about her attitude toward impeachment would indicate that she would like to get this off her plate soon as possible and put it on the Senate's plate. She doesn't see this as a big winning issue for Democrats who are heading into an election year. You know, her delay has been a help to Chuck Schumer as he tries to pressure Mitch McConnell on the Senate rules for the impeachment trial. But it's a reasonably weak hand that she has. She doesn't have big leverage, given that she doesn't really want to hold impeachment over the president's head forever. I think it's done. Allies of Pelosi say it's done two helpful things. One, it's shined a spotlight on their concerns about the Senate rules for an impeachment trial. The second thing is it seems to really bug Trump. You know, he has really cranked up his Twitter feeds, attacks on Nancy Pelosi, and that may be a sign that he finds this annoying.
Let's take a phone call. Marie in the Bronx, you're on the air with Susan Page. Hi, Marie.
Hi. Yeah, I have two questions. First is, how is Breitbart News and other such media covering this event? Is it supportive? The second is, can a president be impeached if the nation is in a state of war or heightened alert? I'll take my call offline.
Marie, thank you so much. So in answer to your first question, as you were asking it, I pulled up the Breitbart site. You ready for the top headline on Breitbart right now? Nancy Pelosi to introduce resolution implying preemptive surrender to Iran. That's further than I thought even they would go. The second headline is, watch, I guess it's a video, Ayatollah cries during Iran regime's farewell to Soleimani. What? So that's the second headline. So that's enough on that. What about our other questions?
Breitbart pretty much in President Trump's corner on this one at the moment, you'd say. Yes, on the other question of impeachment, yes, there's no constitutional bar to proceeding with an impeachment trial, even during a time of military crisis. If we were in an actual state of war, like World War III erupted, Congress might reconsider. But the Senate can go ahead with the Senate trial on impeachment once the articles of impeachment arrive. And in fact, the Constitution requires them to deal with it quickly.
Republican Senator Lindsey Graham said something over the weekend about starting the trial without Pelosi officially transmitting the articles. Can they do that?
Mitch McConnell says they can't. Mitch McConnell says, fine with me, if you don't send them over, we'll just keep confirming judges.
And in order to call witnesses from the start, which is the holy grail now for the Democrats, at least four Republicans would have to vote for trial rules to require the witnesses. People say maybe Lisa Murkowski, Cory Gardner, Susan Collins, Tom Tillis, Mitt Romney, for various political reasons in each of their cases. Maybe I'm leaving people out. Are any of them, or potentially four of them, showing signs of being open to that?
You ask if we had heard an outcry from Republicans about the idea of bombing Iranian cultural sites, and we haven't. We haven't heard Republicans be critical in important ways to the president's decision, provocative action on Iran. It's not impossible to get four of those Republicans, but I actually think it's highly unlikely. On no issue have we seen congressional Republicans willing to buck the president. And so even though we've seen Susan Collins express some modest concerns, it just seems unlikely to me that you would get four Republican senators to break with Mitch McConnell and side with Democrats on this one.
There is, meanwhile, some new evidence emerging, and people may have missed it over the holiday break. But there was that big New York Times article which explored the timeline of the 84 days during which the aid to Ukraine was being withheld that tied the president more directly to orchestrating it. And just the other day, another article came out on the site Just Security that, if I'm seeing this right, included a quote by Michael Duffy, who was the one who was kind of holding up the money at the Office of Management and Budget, saying he was doing it on, quote, clear direction from POTUS, meaning the president. Are you aware of this?
Yes. And, I said there were two positive results for Democrats from holding up the articles of impeachment. This would be a third. The just general sense of delay has been an opportunity for Democrats to cite these both two very powerful news stories that fortify the evidence that President Trump knew about the delay on sending military aid to Ukraine, and that he did so over the objections, the legal and other objections of officials from his own government. So that's been another kind of talking point for Democrats, but I can't say that I've seen it persuade Republicans to change their course.
Last thing, role of Rand Paul when it comes to the attack against Iran's military leader, Soleimani, and for that matter, Tucker Carlson. There is this sort of libertarian, if that's the right word, or America First in Tucker Carlson's case, which, identifies with Trump, but wing that does not want the U.S. embroiled in foreign wars, and Rand Paul and his father before him, Congressman Ron Paul, who ran for president as a libertarian, have been saying for years and years and years that the conflict with Iran is more the U.S.'s fault than Iran's fault. Does Rand Paul and does Tucker Carlson, by virtue of his voice on Fox News, have a role to play in this national debate?
Well, you mentioned early in the show that maybe it was Rubio the clip you played of Senator Rubio saying that President Trump had been pretty restrained in responding to previous provocative acts by Iran. And I think that's true. And I think that Rand Paul and Tucker Carlson were part of the president's restraint, part of saying the United States should not get involved in these, that part of that America first isolation sentiment that runs through, that the president talked about in the 2016 campaign, getting out of endless wars, not having the United States be the policeman of the world. But there have really been two strains to President Trump's attitude toward world affairs, as Maggie Haberman of the New York Times has written about. There's the isolationist strain. There's also his hawkish strain that wants to exercise American muscle around the world. And I think in this case, you see the president, we were surprised when the president did so little in response to the earlier provocative actions by Iran, including calling back that drone strike, that because it would have killed 24 people or so, fears of that, to the very strong reaction, the strongest possible reaction that he took just a couple days ago.
Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you, Brian.
Earlier in this series, we took phone calls from listeners who proposed articles of impeachment. Now we're inviting calls from listeners who do not think Trump should be removed from office. We'll give you the phone number in a minute. Here's one that came in.
My name is David Nywood from New Jersey. I do not believe that Trump should be removed from office simply because the Democrats have not done a sufficiently good job to take the Republicans' concerns and negate them. And that leaves this as unipartisan. Trump has done more than enough, and the Democrats need to make their case better so that this is a bipartisan issue.
If you are anyone who does not want to see Trump removed from office after being impeached by the House, we're collecting those arguments now. Call in and tell us why. Leave your voicemail at 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-8255 or 844-745-TALK. And maybe we'll use yours on the podcast. Impeachment, a daily podcast, is excerpted from my live daily radio show, which we also invite you to listen to. It's The Brian Lehrer Show, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, streaming live then at WNYC.org. See you tomorrow.